Welcome back, listeners, to Built to Lead Season 4, Rebels with a Cause. Today, it is our joy to be joined by not only one guest, but three special guests. I will be introducing them in a moment, but first, we wanted to let you know, for this episode, we are having a cross-generational leadership panel, and with us, we will have three esteemed panelists. Our panelists today represent a leadership spectrum to talk to when we have an emerging leader, a mid-career leader, and an expert leader to talk us through today and learn more about their thoughts on authentic leadership. I can't wait to hear what our guests have to share with us. Now it's time for us to welcome our three special guests. We have Wendy Nelson, Jacqueline Pierce, Sahand, and Safi. Wendy, let's start with you.
Great. I guess I must be the expert person. So I right now am senior fellow. I spend my time as senior fellow in IHPME, and I'm also an instructor in the Master's in Health Informatics program. Before I went to education, I was a senior executive for about 35 years in the public hospital and primary community care sector, in the private sector, and also in government. So I've been around the block.
Welcome. Jacqueline, over to you.
Thanks so much, Mobeen. So I'm Jacqueline Pierce, and I am currently the Executive Director of the Office of Health System Transformation at London Health Sciences Center. It's a mouthful. And in my role right now, I lead a really amazing team of creators, dreamers, curious souls who all are there to create the future of health. And we're really going to transform health together with our community. We act as the bridge between the hospital and our OHT and community partners. And we're really trying to develop and deliver and test new innovations that will help us to bring a whole other brand to healthcare in the future. So with that, like, I'm an occupational therapist by background, which I'm a clinician. I came from a clinician background. I had a really diverse career across a number of sectors and a lot of different experiences across different populations. But most of my career, I would say, you know, 80% has been spending time in the community. And I feel so passionate about the importance and value of community to an individual's resiliency and spirit. So growing up in Northern Ontario, I experienced that firsthand. You were, you know, highly dependent on the community around you. And so I think my reason to ETRA, you know, and the dream that I get to live in my current role is that I get to actually make real and lasting impact for those who need us to work differently the most in order for them to really regain their lives and purpose. So thank you.
Welcome, Jacqueline. And Sahand, over to you.
Thanks, Mobeen. My name is Sahand Insafi. Thanks for having me on the show. I am a clinician by background. I'm a physician assistant that works in the emergency department at the University Health Network. I've been doing that over the last 10 years. And now I've transitioned a little bit out of clinical. So I'm doing about 50% clinical. And I spend the other half of my time both in education at the McMaster University Physician Assistant Education Program as the chair of clerkship, as well as the medical lead for emergency preparedness. And I started in that role at UHN over the last two and a half years now. So have been learning a tremendous amount in terms of kind of health leadership, hospital leadership and operations in that role, and also as the new chair of the clerkship program at McMaster as well. Pleasure to be here.
We are so thrilled to have all of you with us today. Welcome to the podcast. I wanted to start by asking each of you, in your opinion, what makes a good rebel? And we'll start in the same order. Wendy, why don't you go first?
Ooh, a good rebel. Well, a good rebel has a cause, first of all. A cause or a vision that really, you know, resonates with you as a person, right? That resonates with who you are authentically. And I guess, you know, if change and or the cause or future was easy, we wouldn't need rebels. But rebels encounter resistance. So a good rebel has grit, optimism, persistence, humor, and I think resilience. They don't give up. And I think also the last I would say about what makes a good rebel is they need the ability to inspire others, to motivate others who want to join in on that cause, creating alliances. So they're good listeners and good at engaging others with communication, empathy, and I'm going to repeat, humor.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing. Jacqueline, how about you?
I completely agree with you, Wendy. Oh my goodness. I cannot tell you how much grit. I first learned about the concept of grit earlier in my career, and I'm so grateful to one of my mentors for that and having read the book, because I think it's one of the pivotal things. Things do not move quickly when you're a rebel, and you can easily spin your wheels and get burnt out if you're not really focused on short, realistic, achievable goals. And I think because when you're a rebel, you have this big, big vision. Another good quality is being able to reverse engineer that into those small milestones that'll take you there and give you the wind in your sails that will get you across the finish line. I was not 100% good at that over the course of my career. And then I had to, get very adept at really seeing those small incremental changes that you can move towards the end, the goalpost. The other thing I would say is that in order to be a good rebel, you have to be able to package your ideas. I think some of my best experiences have come from when I've worked in business development, actually. And it was like having to know, who are your users and your customers? How do you tap into their emotion? Like tapping into people's emotion. And I always say to my team, what they know to be true in their hearts. And sometimes our minds overrule it, right? Because we don't think it's possible or we don't think that we can deliver it. But you have to tap into their heart so that you can find. So when you're a rebel, you have to lead from the heart. In our discussion of authenticity, you have to be able to feel that you can lead from a place of great passion and make people feel really connected emotionally to the cause and to making the outcome happen, because it's usually something that's very difficult to move.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. And Shahand, how about you?
I mean, I completely agree with everything that's been said so far. I think for me, really, it was interesting because when I reflected on this, I realized I really always tend to think of a rebel as someone that's as something that's associated with, a bit of defiance, non-compliance. And it was really great to do the exercise because it helped me to see the many other positive definitions. So I was glad when you kind of clarified, what makes a good rebel. And I think when I put on my health leader and clinician hat, I really view this as someone who is not afraid to challenge the status quo and really doing this in pursuit of positive change. And one of the big things that comes to mind for me is in advocacy. So really having, to Wendy's point, a cause that you're rallying behind, but really also being able to advocate towards that cause, challenge the practices and the policies that don't really prioritize that. And for me in the health system, I think of really always being honed in on patient well-being and patient-centeredness, and really making sure that we're advocating for things that put that patient-centered piece in the center of it.
All three of you have such great ideas and definitions of what makes a good rebel, and I'm really excited to tap into all these definitions in this podcast.
And I really like the ideas. You talk about challenge the status quo. I think that's important. I think each of you have done that in your own right in your careers at each stage. And Jacqueline, you talked about packaging ideas. And I think even just going back to Wendy's, what came to mind is gopher. So if you go with the G-O-P-H-R, I kind of see gopher there as a quick acronym. So how do you package those ideas? How do you be a rebel and maybe come up with something new? And really just coming back to what our topic is today, and we're really looking at authenticity. And authenticity is more than just being true to yourself. It's more about being self-aware of your own strength and weaknesses while possessing humility with a strong sense of morality. Authenticity is also about growth and a continuous learning mindset. Francis Gino describes authenticity as being transparent about our own preferences, our own emotions, and our own beliefs. So for each of you, this question is for all three. How do you define authenticity? And maybe can you quickly tell us a story about a time in your journey where you had to show your true authentic self and how that helped propel you? Wendy, we can start with you.
To me, there are three parts of authenticity, and they came over time for me. The first is know yourself. The second is be yourself. And the third, which was the hardest, is be able to see yourself. So the first, know yourself, know who you are, you know, your identities, your values, as you say, Matthew, your strengths, but also know your vulnerabilities as well. And there are ways that, you know, a whole set of tools to around self-awareness and getting to know who you are. Then being yourself is making that person visible to others. And that's not always easy, particularly if who you are authentically doesn't represent the status quo. If you're different. The third, see yourself, that came to me later in my career. That was able to look at the authentic me through the eyes of others, to really see how my actions and behaviors impacted others, and to make adjustments, not to give up my authenticity, but to realize that who I am will impact others, and you want to do that positively. Examples. I will give you a couple of examples. One where I took in information and kind of, I guess, fine-tuned my authentic self. During my career, I got some feedback that on how I was seen by others. I'm naturally very outgoing, lots of energy. You know, I think quickly, I talk quickly. And the feedback was that sometimes people felt that was disrespectful of them, that I wasn't really engaging and listening with other people. And I've really worked hard, you know, to see myself as others do and to really not lose the authenticity, but to recognize that people need different things from me and to become a better listener and to go slow when I'm naturally inclined to go fast. Am I perfect on that? No, but it's a work in progress. One more quick example. I love to laugh, and I'm going to try hard not to laugh on this podcast because, you know, and I was given feedback, and that's who I am authentically, that as a leader, I laugh too much. And as a woman who laughed, I wasn't taken seriously. People didn't see me as senior exec or CEO material. That was actually said to me. A bit sexist, but, you know, but I thought about it. And was I willing to give up laughter and humor? And I decided I wasn't. So in one case, I kind of modified who my authentic self might be, this quick thinking, you know, fast person, and adapted. In the second, I took that feedback in and it's like, no, I'm going to stick with who I am. So that's how I see authenticity in a couple of examples in my career.
And Wendy, I've known you for a while as well, so I'm glad the laughter is still there because I don't think you would be the same without it. So it's good. And really just listening, sometimes just understanding what needs to change, and some things do need to be adapted and some things we just need to be authentic to ourselves.
Exactly.
And then Jacqueline, for yourself, how would you define authenticity?
Yeah, I'm with Wendy, but I'm really going to riff off a little bit of Brené Brown, who's one of my favorites, because I think in order to be your authentic self, you have to really be courageous. You have to have the courage and confidence to develop what is the muscle. It is a muscle, authenticity, to really fully show up as yourself and to keep yourself grounded and to know what you need to feed your own soul, to show up and process your emotion and to be able to show up as your own self every day. It's an act of courage, right? To show that vulnerability and, you know, that humility. And so, yeah, so I would say courage is like my number one. The other piece is, you know, that presence is really important, because being present to help others know that you truly see them and that you're really coming from a compassionate, empathetic place when you want and you value, you want to get to know them, their perspective, their things. You care about them as a human being and as a team member. And there's different ways to do that. But I think, you know, what time has told me and has shown me quite powerfully is that the best way to do that is by being present, like really being present in the moment, not thinking about what's on your calendar, not, you know, checking your texts. It's like really showing people that you show up as who you are and giving them the permission to do that as well, you know. And then the other piece is, I think for me, being authentic means that you act from a place of integrity. So, you know, your words align, you know, to your actions and your follow through, and people can trust you, you know, that you're consistent over time, that you're, they're not getting one version of you in one place and another version of you in another. And, you know, that they don't see you with your executive team and you don't, you know, say hi, or you're not your normal self. Like, I think authenticity is that integrity to be who you are in every space. And that gives, again, that permission to everybody else to lower their guard and do the same and shine for, you know, all of the things that they bring to the table. So, yeah, that's how I would package authenticity. And that's, you know, my aspirational definition of it, you know, because I think also like we do better on certain days than others, right? In playing that role.
Thank you. And yes, thank you for your presence even today. And so Hans, how would you define authenticity?
I mean, it's so great to hear these perspectives, because I couldn't agree more. I don't have a whole lot else to add as much as I just want to emphasize that I really agree with the vulnerability piece. You know, for me, authenticity reflects as it really just means to be real, right? To be genuine, to be honest. I agree completely with both Jacqueline and Wendy in terms of the amount of self-reflection that's required to be authentic and really accepting who you are and understanding who you are and recognizing, to Jacqueline's point, I think it was a great one, that it really is a continuous work in progress, I think, for all of us. And I think as an example, really, you know, I view authenticity, I think you have to be authentic throughout everything that you do, but there's authenticity in terms of personal authenticity, there's relationship authenticity, professional authenticity. And, you know, when I put my educator hat on, a story that really resonates with me is that as a student, one of my most kind of effective mentors, teachers, was really good at demonstrating humility and authenticity and comfort in sharing their mistakes, which I found was a rarity at the time when I was training. And I vividly remember them after we were debriefing a really tough case early in my career, kind of sharing some of the challenges that they've faced throughout the case and saying, you know, I'm really sharing this with you because we're all here in service of our patients. And I hope that you can learn from me so that you don't make the same mistakes that I've made. And I now daily almost will try to reiterate this story to the students that we have. And the case that I have is, you know, I had a very challenging case of a patient that came in quite distressed, worried about a particular diagnosis. And as a clinician, I didn't actually feel that, you know, there was validity behind this. I didn't think that the evidence pointed in that direction. And the mistake that I made was almost dismissing the patient's concerns because they were so anxious and so worried that I felt that the best way to actually, you know, address the concern was to say, you don't have this, don't worry about it. There's no evidence that this is what's happening. And lo and behold, you know, long story short, the patient went home. I learned that they came back a week later and they had a diagnosis that they were worried about. And I had a student with me at the time, and I followed up with them and essentially shared this exact same quote. And I said, you know, the outcome wouldn't have changed. The diagnosis was a terminal diagnosis. But the mistake that I made in this scenario is that I spent all of this time trying to convince the patient that they didn't have it. And really that medicine is a game of probability. And, you know, I should have just explained it's unlikely that this is the case. Here are the things that you need to do. And really, again, trying to demonstrate that level of vulnerability, because I think early on when I learned about the case, I was a bit hesitant to accept the mistake. And then showing the student that, you know, it is important to accept when we do make these mistakes, and hopefully you can learn from them so that you don't make these same mistakes throughout your career. So I think vulnerability for me is a huge piece of authenticity.
Sahand, I'm so happy that you brought that up, because Gino discusses in the chapter how people actually value listening to other people's mistakes, and it resonates with them more than actually the success stories. And this is exactly what we have been fortunate with doing here at Built to Lead, where many of our guests who have been in various leadership positions have been actually really comfortable sharing their personal experiences with our listeners. And we've actually heard feedback that it's been very effective for our listeners as well. So I really appreciate you bringing that up and kind of taking a deep dive into what you just shared. Do stories about failures, like mistakes, lessons, and lessons learned, resonate with you more, even in your current practice? And ultimately, does that motivate you to, you know, even if you, when you do fail, to get back up even quicker and continue building the momentum?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, I think I'd be lying if I said I wasn't afraid of failure. You know, I don't think anyone's like looking forward to failure, yeah. Right? But I think that the stories definitely help. And I think that, you know, when we have mentors and colleagues that we look up to who are willing to share those stories, it almost humanizes them in a way, right? There's people that I look up to throughout my career that are, you know, somewhat godly figures, right? There's no way that these people make mistakes. They're so comfortable in their shoes. They've been through it. They know that everything in and out. And when you get those brief periods of vulnerability where they share those mistakes, it's really humbling, and it shows that, you know, we're all human. And so I think that I definitely learn from mistakes. We try to, you know, kind of ingrain this into our teaching and throughout medicine. But also I think definitely it is a motivator, because I think, you know, there's that saying, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And I think sometimes when we're afraid of failure, we might try to avoid the task at hand. Whereas I think sometimes we have to just take risks and lean into those challenging situations and be willing to accept failure if it were to happen, and to really just get back up and learn from it and use it in our growth and development as individuals and as leaders.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, pivoting a little bit to Wendy. Wendy, you know, throughout your career and now as an educator, you've done something that's been very transformative for a lot of students, and that's been through a program called Vernissage Health, which is, and you know, Built to Lead is an extension of Vernissage Health. And I want to touch up on this side note, even though it's been four seasons, I think, Wendy, this is one of the first ones where you've actually been here for a full conversation mid-podcast. So that's a huge win for us as a team. But I want to ask you, you know, how open are you, having gone through so many years of different leadership positions and being at the position at the place that you are now, to share your experiences and your, especially your vulnerabilities as a leader? And what value do you see this as in soft leadership skill? And I would love for you to also add in, you know, that emphasis of the power of Vernissage Health and how students are learning that from expert leaders that you bring on.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for, you know, your engagement in Vernissage Health. The purpose is to create a different, help people be that different type of leader, be the more vulnerable, authentic leader. So I feel really passionately about sharing. You know, I grew up where it was the hero leader. Sahand talked about that, where we just, you know, there's no way I could possibly be a leader because they were perfect. And I was fortunate in my career from the very beginning to work with very authentic leaders who embraced failure as a way of learning. And I was often saw other folks dive into the deep end. Did it go perfectly? No, but they were willing to take a risk. And good things did come out of that. And then I started throwing myself in the deep end, or other people started throwing me in the deep end. And it's like, yeah, I can swim, I can survive, I can learn, and I can learn to do different strokes, you know? And from watching people fail and struggle, and then to hear those stories, I find that so inspirational, and it kind of levels the playing field, right? It levels the playing field. It says to everyone, we can all do it. We all struggle, but we can all learn and become better. So you can hear in my voice, so, you know, at the beginning, when we started Vernissage, I had a story to tell that was really difficult for me to tell, and I did it. And the feedback was just so powerful. And then other people started telling their stories. And now you know that it's a safe, confidential space for folks to share. And it lifts a burden from all of us to be perfect. You know, it does allow people to speak from their heart, because the heart is full of wonderful gifts, but it's also full of pain and setbacks. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for that question. Yeah.
No, thank you, Wendy. And thank you just for the platform of Vernissage Health. Even as somebody who's been part of the Vernissage Health Dialogue Series, again, just reiterates, hearing those stories is really powerful. Like, even learning from these leaders we talked about, they look like heroes, but the hero's journey always has some sort of fall, and the best stories always have some challenge. So if we watch a movie with no challenge, the box office, that's probably not making $1, if anything. Only the director is going there, I would think. So the best stories have some type of failure. And it's kind of interesting when we think about authenticity, we don't really see so much research about authenticity. So even maybe Jacqueline, you can talk on this. Why don't you think this is something that's studied more as a form of leadership and development?
Such a great question, Matthew. I would speculate that it's because it's just gaining traction as a concept that we're really applying in our day-to-day, that we're seeing more and more in leadership. We're just starting to phase out of that, those traditional hierarchical, like power-based models of leadership, and moving over to, you know, we're in this period of, I think, transformation, like in terms of leadership style, structure, and moving to those distributed paradigms. And so when you're in a distributed paradigm, you're leading by influence, you're not leading by power. And so coming from that place, I mean, you have to, it lends itself to people who are able to stand in their authenticity and confidently say, like, I don't know, and are curious and bring that quality to the conversation and use their team in a different way, not to have power over their team, but leverage their team and guide them and know how to put together strengths really well to bring a diversity of ideas to solving complex problems, which is what we're trying to do at in our team. And is the way of the future, I believe. So I think because we're just in that period of transformation, there's a bit of that friction between old and new styles that's happening right now. And I see it. I mean, it took me a long time to unlearn. Like, we're in a period of unlearning right now. So I think what I've seen in myself and reflecting on my journey is there was a lot of unlearning. And I worked with I had the opportunity to work with a fabulous executive coach. And I had gone from, you know, being like a project manager to being an engagement lead to being in business development to then circling back and becoming a VP, you know, of operations in a community organization. So I went from like leading by influence to now having this VP title, right? And I had this fabulous CEO that I worked with, and she was very authentic. And she was like, Jacqueline, we just give you the title so you can sit at the tables. And it's true, like you're just invited to the table. So inside my organization, I had great psychological safety to show up who I was. But when I went to those tables, I sure didn't. And I had to, I felt like I had to show up as that power suited, you know, my, you know, blazer on and everything to exert my power at those tables in order to hold relevance in that space. And I think we are still in this really interesting transition. So, you know, that executive coach really helped me work through, I think, some of that, because I had this model in my head of what it meant to reach executive level and what that meant. And I had to like somehow shapeshift myself into a different being when I was in that role versus the role at home versus the role with my friends. And I understand that there are subtleties. And of course, you know, there are ways to maintain my professional self in a different way, in a different, the way I project differently. But really at the core, where I act from the values, you know, the things that I feel passionate about are the same, whether it's in my home context with my family or with my team and at work. And it took me a while to really understand how to feel okay bringing that person into those more traditionally oriented settings and not letting that upset the balance of my authenticity.
I really appreciate you bringing in the concepts of old and new leadership styles and concepts that are in both and how they've morphed over time, because the two articles that we are going to be exploring just now kind of really deep dive into these specific ideas. And, you know, Matthew, earlier you brought on the fact that, you know, not a lot of research has been, you know, done on the value of bringing in authentic leadership. And but now we're seeing a shift where, you know, studies are being done into seeing what type of leaders are out there. And on that note,
but sadly, this is the perfect time to end part one of this episode. In part two, Matthew and I will continue our discussion with our transgenerational leaders on exploring an article on authentic leadership in healthcare organizations. Join us on the next episode to learn how you can build your own skills as an authentic leader and hear from our guests what they've learned over the years.
Thank you for listening today, and thank you for joining us on Built to Lead Season 4, Rebels with a Cause. Built to Lead is created and hosted by Matthew Goldburn
and co-hosted by Mubin Lalani.
Built to Lead is a companion podcast to the Vernissage Health Dialogue Series at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation at the University of Toronto.
Tell us what you thought about this week's episode. You can find us on LinkedIn at Vernissage Health and on Instagram at Vernissage Health. You'll find both of these in the episode description. Today's episode was produced by
Dheeraj Thakur,
Matthew Goldburn, with music composed by Sindhu.
A special thanks to Wendy Nelson, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation. Until next time.